I'm going to ask.
There you go.
My name is Linda, and I'm 73 years old. Today is June 19th, 2019, and I'm speaking with Wendy Handler. We are recording this interview in New York, New York.
My name is Wendy Handler. Today is June 19th, and I'm speaking with Linda. We are recording this interview in New York, New York. So, Linda, tell me a little bit about yourself. Where and when were you born?
I was born in Manhattan, in New York Hospital, and in 1946.
Tell us a little bit about when you first began to realize your sexual or your gender identity.
Well, when I was 4 years old, I started kindergarten, and this was in 1950, at a time when there were girls' toys and boys' toys, and it was very separate. Everything was separated by gender, even in the kindergarten. So, and of course, we were all wearing dresses, and the boys were all wearing pants. And I remember we were told to have free play, and the girls all went running to the little playhouse with the stove and the ironing board and the sink and the refrigerator and the make-believe food and so forth. There were too many of them to play in that one situation. It was very crowded, very fast. That's why they ran over. And then I looked at the other side, and the boys had all run over to the blocks and the trucks. And there were plenty of blocks and plenty of trucks. And besides which, to me, what the girls were doing was housework. And that wasn't as interesting to me as blocks and trucks. So I went over where the boys were. My kindergarten teacher didn't like me very much. I don't know exactly why, but I can guess. And I just was a nonconformist, that's all. So, and I was disappointed to find out that we weren't going to learn how to read until first grade. I thought when I entered school that that's what it was for, to read. Mm-hmm. I was subsequently surprised to find out how little reading actually got done there. And I was, I used to wish that I could stop going to school and just sit in the library and read. But that wasn't allowed. So
school was when you first learned that, you know, you felt a little bit different than the other girls.
Yes, and because it was such a demarcation, it was either boy or girl. There right. was nothing in between. There was no unisex. There was nothing at that time. So I became male identified. And at times, and at other times, because I wore dresses and shoes, you know, girls' shoes and everything. There were even girls' raincoats and girls' galoshes. Everything was either girls or boys, and it was very different, one from the other. And so I wore the girls' clothes to school, and I was I found that I was much more calm and peaceful, sitting that way. Then when I went home and changed into my play clothes, which were dungarees and a shirt, and went outside, I was much more active and agitated. But I also was very restless sometimes in school because I was bored, and I just restless. I was anxious. I had anxiety, but I didn't know what it was. Right. And they had me evaluated, and the doctor said that I was overly active and aggressive and needed diversion. Wrote it down in my record, my health record. So in the third grade, in the second grade, they tested us. They gave us IQ tests, and they put me in third grade in the class with the other children who scored high on that test. And I was calmed down much by that.
So the intellectual stimulation
was better. The teacher was really smart. I mean, she understood me.
Yeah. And so talk about that a little bit. So the understanding, it sounds like you were aware of some differences with your interest areas.
Yes.
And do you remember when you first identified as a homosexual, gay person?
I was 13, and I'd fallen in love one-sidedly with someone that was in a group of us. We were musicians, and we used to travel into the middle of Queens to an orchestra rehearsal and on Saturday mornings. And this gal was one of the people and who traveled with us. She was a year behind me in school. And I just remember sitting on the subway and staring at her as if she were the most incredible mm-hmm. thing I'd ever seen. And I knew.
And so how long between the time that you knew and you shared with somebody that you came out?
I told my mother 2 years later, and she didn't believe me. She said, no, you're not. It's just a phase. You'll get over it. And I wasn't prepared for that reaction. I was prepared for her to be upset, angry, sad, something, but not that. And I didn't know what to say to her.
And did that affect the way you felt about it? Were you questioning, or were you sure? How was that
for
you?
Well, I also had a friend at the time I used to go to the ballet with in the theater, and he he was a year younger than I was. So when I was 17 and he was 16, he told me that he was gay. But up to that point, I was trying to be a couple with him because I was comfortable with him. So I guess I was trying to get out of it. I mean, a lot of people my age got married, had children. They did a lot of things to get away from it, whether they knew it or they didn't know it or they couldn't face it. I could face it. I just didn't know what to do with it. I didn't know how to be one. There were no role models. There was no information that I could get my hands on. Nothing in the library, nothing. Turned out there was a book, but I think in the bookstores in the village, if I'd wanted Del Martin and Phyllis Lyon's book, I would have had to go to the counter and ask for it. I don't think it was out there. And I would not have done that. But I did. There was a program on television called Open End. David Susskind was the host, and he had people on from the Mattachine Society. That was a men's homosexual society, and so my mother and I watched it because my mother was interested for her own reasons, and I was interested for mine, and we listened to it, and it was a long conversation, a couple of hours at least, and I saw that they had a listing in the telephone directory, but I didn't call them because I said, well, they're the men's society, I would need to know the women's. Did not occur to me that they might know where I could find the women in an environment mm-hmm. other than a bar. I knew about the bars, but you couldn't find them. If you didn't know where to look, I think the only way you could find them, but I didn't know at the time, was if you got into a taxi and said, take me to a lesbian bar. The drivers would have known. But I had no idea about that until much later, many years later. Somebody told me that. She said, that's what I could have done.
And was it helpful to have this ally, your friend that you went to the ballet with?
Yes, it was.
That you were able to speak?
It was. I didn't tell him. He told me, but I didn't tell him. I was disappointed to find out because I was hoping that maybe we could, but It would have been something to hide behind. It first of all, I trusted him, so it would have been, it would have been a situation if we'd gotten married where it would have been an arrangement that would have protected both of us, which is what previous generations had done. But I didn't realize my generation was not going to do that. They were either going to pretend to be straight, marry straight men and break their hearts and screw up their marriages and, you know, whatever. Sometimes even become suicidal themselves. I met one woman who was in that kind of a situation. She was a Japanese woman, and she was married to a Japanese man. They were both homosexuals. She said, but we had to do this for the family.
Mm-hmm. Did you have a relationship that was important to you, a first love that was reciprocal?
Oh, well, I guess the crush I had on that girl when I was 13 was the one. And then I had a couple of other crushes, and one was on an actress. You know how that happens sometimes when you're a teenager. And it turned out she was a lesbian, but I didn't know it at the time. I just sensed it. And we were friendly, but I never saw her away from the theater. Mm-hmm. It was a theatrical. And then I hid. I hid, and I dated guys. I tried again to find someone that I could marry that was like me. Stuart didn't want to. He didn't want to get married. The one I was going to the ballet and the theater with, he didn't want that. But I thought I might find someone who would. And I dated some very nice men, but it didn't work. One was bisexual, but. And I think he would have been okay to be a couple, but I wouldn't have, because he was completely control freak. He controlled the whole situation. Yeah. And I.
Did you have a first love in your life?
Oh, you're still asking. Yeah. Eventually, I was 29 years old, and I went to a bar. And I met someone who was sitting by herself. Often people went with other people. They didn't go by themselves, but this one was alone. And we kind of looked at each other, and I sat down. I asked her if I could join her, and she said, the seat's empty, you know, you're very blasé. And I got involved pretty quickly with her. That happened a lot. And Anyway, up until that point, I was very lonely, and I used to just pick up guys and sleep with them, just to have company for a while. I tried to make friends with women. I had one female friend, but who I wasn't attracted to. But after I met Susan, the person I just told you about. This other friend, I came out to this other friend, and she couldn't deal with it, so that ended the friendship. And when I graduated college, at that point, I went back. Susan and I had broken up for a good reason, but at the end of my college, when I was finished with all my courses, I was confronted with a summer where I would be looking for work, either looking for work or going through the summer and going to graduate school, which I wasn't at all sure about doing, with a degree that I didn't know how much I could do it with. The degree was really in psychology. That school that I went to only had education, only had majors, no minors, but the education was almost a double major because I did almost everything. And I don't know. What was the question? I'm a little lost.
Oh, we were just talking about your life, and you were talking about relationships.
So I got back together with Susan, and we had a very, very tempestuous relationship. I learned a great deal. I really became myself there. And by the time it was over, I was 33 or 34. And she passed away shortly after we broke up.
So you lived openly as a lesbian couple?
Yes, in my apartment, in my neighborhood, which was a working class, highly heterosexual neighborhood.
How was that for you?
Well, the neighbors were not too happy with us, but they couldn't do anything about it. The landlady tried to evict us because we didn't have enough money to pay the rent sometimes. And so
it wasn't related to your sexuality.
Well, it might have been, but the excuse was that.
Yeah.
And we walked all the way from 205th Street in the concourse down to where Yankee Stadium is in the Bronx to the courthouse in the snow with a checkbook trying to figure out what we were going to do when we got there. And when we got there, before we got there, Susan figured out that, look, we've been paying something towards the rent every month. It has to be 2 months of non-payment to be evicted. So all we have to do is show up. So it was a long walk. We got there. And when they called the roll, we answered. And they called the landlady, and she said she dropped the case because we showed up and she didn't have a case. She would have, if by default, if we hadn't been able to get there. We didn't have money for a bus.
Yeah, you walked.
We walked, and I lost a lot of weight. I was down to 125 pounds, and I was almost 5 feet 11.
Yeah, that's...
So I was pretty thin. And Susan, who was rather heavy to begin with, her legs started to show instead of like this, you know, the kind of... And she went back home. She got scared and went back home. And
was your mom accepting of your relationship with Susan?
Oh, the relationship?
Or your coming out and...
Well, she was angry about it, but I had tried to keep it from her because I didn't think she could deal with it. I figured her reaction to me when I was 15 had something to do with her not being to deal with any more problems. And then it was just my mother and myself. Then I became ill with a chronic illness. So it was too much. Yeah. So I didn't push it down her throat. Besides which, I thought, like I said, I could find someone. But finally, I realized that, you know, I've got to live my life. 29 years old, never had a relationship, no good. So I she was angry and she became indignant, but it was kind of funny, you know, and she was, you know, Susan came to my graduation, and so did my mother and her husband. She'd gotten married about 10 years before I graduated, and so Susan took some photographs of us, because she was a photographer, and you know, we got through the day, and I don't know. When we were going hungry, my parents were coming over from New Jersey with bundles of food, and you know, and handing us $10 and saying, "Go get a job." And I kept finding jobs. Susan's went back to driving a cab. We did. There was a lot of stuff going on. Mm-hmm. And my parents were very worried about me and worried, you know, and just kept telling me, throw her out, you know. Mm-hmm. And I just couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Couldn't do it.
Yeah. And then you eventually broke up and...
Well, she went back to her home. Mm-hmm. And for a year, we stayed away from each other. And then she came back.
And how have you... After Susan left and you were working on your own and living openly as a lesbian, was that a positive, an easier experience for you? I mean, at this point, it must have been, you know, the early 70s.
At that point, it was 1979.
Later 70s,
I went to college 7 years after I graduated high school. Well, the neighborhood settled down and, you know, kind of forgot about it. It was old news. But at work, I dressed in such a way that you could guess, really. But I didn't talk about it. I figured out that if you don't say anything, if you don't talk about it, they really don't do anything about it. And by that time, you could wear slacks to work. The last time I had had a full-time job, I mean, not while I was with Susan, but before I went to college, when I was working in a hospital, you had to wear dresses and skirts, which bothered me a lot. I didn't want that. So by the time I went back to work in 1979, I could wear slacks and, you know, I could dress a little bit more like the way I felt. Mm-hmm. So that was helpful. And I worked in a Jewish firm, and a Jewish-owned firm. Mm-hmm. And they...
Law firm? Is
it? No, it wasn't a law firm. It was Jewish-owned. It was another type of... It was a wholesale.
Okay.
And I got along with everybody.
Yeah.
It was fine. Yeah.
Good.
People liked me.
Yeah. So do you have memories when you were treated kindly, when people knew that you were a lesbian, as opposed to the difficulties that you felt when you were younger?
When they knew. Yes, my upstairs neighbor knew. Actually, I came out to her before I even met Susan. I came out to her, and
Was she the same age as you?
No, she was my mother's generation, but she was a very nice lady, and she didn't care.
Yeah.
Attached, you know, I wasn't going to fall in love with her. She was too much older, so.
Yeah.
And she was very kind, and we became friends. Her daughter, however, did not want to be friends, so that was okay. Mm-hmm. And I didn't run into a lot of when I went to work in a different place in 1981, I had a job, but it wasn't working out, so I went to another job. I went from job to job to job, and so this other job, there was a lawyer. It was a law firm, and there was a lawyer who was very kind to me. She was kind of an outlier also, because she was a lawyer, but she wasn't one of the partners, and there was one other female lawyer who had nothing to do with this other one. So she and I was in the accounting office. The others didn't like me. So she and I got together at lunchtime when we used to talk. And so she was very kind, very, very, very kind. Helped me in a lot of ways.
You could share things with her, she could share things with you.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Nice.
And later on, I mean, she, I told her I was having trouble with my neck, and she recommended a chiropractor, and, you know, had never been to one, and she talked, she said, look, it's not nothing wrong with it, you'll see, it'll be good, and things like that, information.
And are you part of a larger LGBTQ community, or did you, you know, just keep your friendships and not?
I just, most of my friends are heterosexual. Mm-hmm. Simply because when I have been part of LGBT groups at Identity House, particularly, and I got into difficulties. Some of these gals were really, they must have been playing by a different set of rules. I don't know, but I just couldn't manage. I got overly involved with one of them, and it was one-sided, and I had to break away from that, and my behavior was not good. Her behavior was not, it just, I don't know. I just couldn't handle myself with these people.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying it was their fault, maybe my fault, you know, just I tried to be like my mother in the way that she was with other people, because she was successful with friends. You know, she was successful in her friendships. And so I found that I was more, my social, the rules by which I socialized were more like the heterosexuals than the homosexuals that I knew. And also, And then things, problems happened. Because of my illness, I had to take medication. And one woman that I met, who was a very nice person, an Irish woman who came to the United States, she was an artist. We went out on a date, and she saw me taking a medicine, and she said, "What is that for?" And I told her it was for anxiety, and that was the last time I saw her. She headed for the hills. That's what got me more difficulty. That illness got me into more, I lost more friend possibilities because of that than because of anything else.
I'm sorry.
And in the gay community, it isn't any different. There are people who come out and say, "Yes, I have taken drugs and I've been an alcoholic and all, but I'm clean and sober," and people will make friends with them, and they won't. But if you tell them that you have some kind of mental illness, they flee. And so that becomes a
That's
that's really more of a problem for me than
more
this.
isolating.
Yeah.
So if you had some advice for your younger self, looking back now over these past 73 years, what would your advice be about?
If I knew then what I know now, okay. I would have told Stuart, and I would have,
You would have told Stuart that you were a lesbian.
yes, and that I would have continued to believe in myself as a lesbian. I knew it wasn't an illness. I didn't believe that for a minute. But I would have been more open about it and just dealt with whatever came as a result of it. I was tired of flack. I'd had flack all through my childhood being a tomboy. I didn't want any more of it. My mother didn't want it either, but I needed to fight with everybody, continue to fight with everybody. And I think I would have, either I would have died or I would have prevailed. But the way I handled it, I kind of became very withdrawn, which I don't think was good for me.
Well,
It
it's how
saved my
you
life.
coped, yeah.
Yeah, it saved my life, but it came at a cost.
Yeah. So you would have told your friend and then continued to live your life according to your own rules. Yeah.
Continued telling my mother
Yeah.
until she finally, but I, it would have been hard on her, so I don't know. If you look back, try to say you would have done differently, but considering the circumstances, I wouldn't have done differently
Yeah.
back then.
Right.
There isn't anything I
That
could
was how
really,
society was.
can't really change these things.
And so the landscape now for young gay kids, is LGBTQ kids, is much different than it was when you were coming up.
Yes.
So what would you have any advice for young people today about how to live their lives?
No, not at all. I'm sure they have better ideas about what to do than I ever had.
How do you want people to remember you?
As a writer, I have a collection at the Lesbian History Archives, and
What's that all about?
well, it's about 40 volumes of journal and short stories, songs, poetry of another person with whom I was involved. Beautiful. She was a very excellent poet, and also in different languages. She was a linguist. And I wish to be remembered for that collection and for that to be read and if there's anything to be learned from it.
Right. Can you tell us what's in there, or like what the subject matter is? Is it
Well,
about your
with the journals, it
experiences?
was everyday life in New York, most of it. And then when I left New York, when I was 41, it becomes a little less interesting, I think, until it gets exciting again when I move to another state. And then it's on and off, but there are some volumes that aren't even worth reading, in my opinion, but others that have some wisdom, I think.
And where are the archives that
They're located in Brooklyn. You could go on the internet and you would see them.
And so have you found a community with that organization? Could you say the name of it again?
It's the Lesbian Herstory Archives.
Herstory.
Yeah, and I have a business relationship with one of the founders. In other words, if I have something to ask about my collection or something, I get their newsletter. I go down there and bring things to add and take things away, and you know, I'm involved in that way. And I've met a few of them, one of the other founders and two of the other founders, and but I don't go there for socializing or events because it's so far away. I live in Brick. That's a long way away from here.
Yeah.
It took me a long time. And then to go to Brooklyn, you know, it's a very long trip, 3 hours each way.
Right.
So, and then if it's at night, if the event is in the evening, I don't have any place to stay anymore. My connections in New York have died.
Yeah.
So.
So how is life in Brick for you?
Peculiar because I'm not out to one person. Mm. In my building, whom I trust, she and her boyfriend, they both know. He knew because he knew me from another situation. And I have heterosexual friends that know and don't care. Mm-hmm. Most of them are either current New Yorkers or former New Yorkers. Yeah. And
so do you feel more accepted or not?
By these people, I feel fine. I feel fine, but I'm living in a county that's very conservative, mm-hmm. highly Republican, Trump voters.
Yeah.
And, you know, I my hair is long now because when I had it short, I used to get flack. You know, mm-hmm. I could see the way people reacted to me and the way I reacted to them. It was too formal. It was too, you know. And sometimes, I know in restaurant, I remember one woman just threw the sugar at me, you know, and I asked her for a packet of sugar, things like that. Because they're very ignorant, a lot of them. So yeah. I just keep it long.
Yeah, it's pretty. Do you have anything else that you want to share about your life or about your experience as a lesbian?
I think the shunning is the cruelest. To work in an office with a group of women who don't want to talk to you and who say mean things to you when you say something, and to realize that you just have to be quiet because otherwise you're going to get hurt is a bad way to handle both mental illness and homosexuality.
Mm-hmm. Any difference. Right.
Yeah. It's a bad way to handle it.
Right.
I'm sure you've had troubles of your own in that situation.
Yeah. So it sounds like you've had a rich internal life. You have a lot of writing that you do.
Yes.
What other things do you like to do?
Well, I have two birds. And
what kind of birds?
I watch them. Two parakeets. And I watch them. They cavort. One's very young, the other's a little older, and the older one helps me, but the younger one, she's very afraid of me because she's still young and new to the situation, just a month or so. And so, you know, she'll back up when I approach the cage and all, but the other one will be standing there right over her, and then she won't be afraid. It's good, yeah. The older one and I were bonded for over a year before I got the next one. So that worked out well.
What are their names?
Susan and Muffin.
Great.
And what else do I do? Housework, clean the house. Mm-hmm. They're messy. Messy birds.
Yeah.
And I play Rummy Cubes. I'm retired, you know. And somebody's forming a bridge group at one of the local senior centers, And so I told her I would like to join, so I'm brushing up on that because I once been taught how to play, but it's been a long time.
Yeah.
So. And sometimes I travel, like I go down to Florida to visit my cousins. In October, I plan to go to England to visit family.
Nice.
Yeah.
So it sounds like your sexual identity is part of who you are, but it's not, at this point, it's not how you govern your days or experience. It's,
there is no such thing. You just lead a normal life. Mm-hmm. Life is a life, you
right,
know.
Right.
Sometimes you have children. Some people have children. Some people don't. Some people had husbands. Some people never did. Some people, the person I was involved with until she passed away 5 years ago, had children and grandchildren, and we were babysitting with the grandchildren and spending time. You know, I still go to birthday parties and graduation mm-hmm. parties and also with the family. That family considers me part of the family.
So nice.
They have been extremely kind in an atmosphere where you wouldn't expect it at all, and they have been very good to me.
Yeah, that kindness is so important.
It's very hard
everybody.
To find, very rare. Susan's mother would have none of it, and my mother was not too happy with Susan, so it's gotten better.
Good. Anything else you want to say?
That's all.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.